WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Many news junkies who find truth in the funny were fans of Hasan Minhaj's Peabody Award-winning show Patriot Act on Netflix. The show ended in 2020, and since then, Minhaj has had some time to think and write and put together a one-man show that is touring the country. Hasan Minhaj will be in New York this weekend for five shows at Radio City Music Hall. There are a few tickets left. They're part of his tour for The King's Jester, a one-man show which runs through June with over 100 performances along the way. Now, you may remember his 2017 special Homecoming King, which focused on his early life and his experience growing up in an Indian-American Muslim family. Well, now he has his own family, which we learn about in the new show. Hasan Minhaj joins me now. Hey, Hasan.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing great. So let's say this. If Patriot Act were recording an episode this week, and as Putin has sent Russian forces into Ukraine, what would the writer's room look and sound like?
I mean, it would be crazy right now. It would just, it would be buzzing right now. And it's one of those things where, you know, with Patriot Act, it would be a little bit different than, say, The Daily Show. So I would have a lot more time to, like, step back and see as things are coming in and developing in real time. And then we could put together a take and perspective on the show. I feel for Trevor. Mm-hmm. Like, Trevor's got to deal with it today. And they have to put together all the news clips and the sots and the comedy take and the perspective, and can you find comedy in the moments and everything that's happening right now or not? That is kind of the sort of giddiness and the excitement that's happening in a comedy, you know, newsroom right now. And I don't know, sometimes if it's excitement, it's a little bit of excitement and terror, which generally has been kind of the undercurrent of the past decade or so that I've been working in this business.
You mentioned The Daily Show, and you were on earlier in the week to talk about The King's Jester, and you said this is what the show is in three words: fertility, fatherhood, and freedom of speech. So yeah. Without getting too in-depth and spoiling anything, I get how the first two are linked, fertility and fatherhood. what is in the show's arc that freedom of speech comes in?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I love most about my sort of storytelling show and my comedic style is a lot of what people see when you see me on tour. If you saw me during the Homecoming King tour or the Before the Storm tour or this tour, you get to see a more personal side of me. A lot of my stories come from a deeply personal place. And one of the things that I wanted to do is tell personal stories around my relationship with how did I know I was funny? What type of jokes do I tell? How far am I willing to take a joke? And if you followed what I've been up to the past few years, you've noticed that, hey, there are times where Hasan will joke about dictators, autocrats. You've seen the jokes that I tell at the Correspondents' Dinner. And one of the things that I analyze in the show is, hey, how far am I willing to take a joke now that I have a family, now that I'm a father, now that I have two kids? How far is too far? And I think that's one of the themes that, you know, jesters deal with in society. But for me, I try to kind of put the lens on myself and see how far I'm willing to take a joke.
How has the pandemic factored into how far you're willing to take a joke?
Well, the pandemic was really interesting in the sense that for all of us touring comedians, immediately our superpower was taken away. You know, like, to be a performer on stage, I'm an IRL type of guy. All of my superpowers are performing on stage in front of a live audience. it's those are those times I wish I was in radio. I wish I was in podcasting. I was like, oh man, this is the perfect time to be like in the studio. You can broadcast to the world. The way, you know, my core strength was is, hey, being in front of a live studio audience, being in front of people, getting their feedback, getting their energy, working on material at the clubs, feeling it out, vomiting out ideas, getting feedback. But I think what was really good is the 2+ years of the pandemic allowed me to wrap up Patriot Act and then allowed me to really write out and beat out this show. And it gave me a lot of time and perspective to analyze a lot of the big events that happened in my life. And then mine that for comedy and time. And believe it or not, I think the time gave me perspective. I got to see my kids grow up too. My daughter's 4 now. I can't believe that. And my son is 2. And he was born during the pandemic. And so all of those things kind of shaped my perspective. And hopefully I became funnier and wiser along the way.
It's interesting. I was watching clips of previous performances. And it's interesting to talk about the vibe you get off of live, because you were the king of eye contact.
Very intense eye contact. Yeah.
What does that do for you? I mean, the first 2 people on the rows of these shows, just beware. He's coming for you. He's looking at you.
It's not that. You know what it really is? Is, and I'm sure everybody has felt this to some capacity now with the hyperconnectivity we all feel on our cell phones and on our laptops. We are now all just screen babies. I'm talking to you right now on my cell phone. After I'm done with this, I'll immediately go to my laptop. As soon as I finish my work for the day, I'll go sit in front of another screen called my TV. And so like, we all have just become hyper-connected screen people. One of the things that you cannot deny, and I'm so glad live performances are back in the city and, you know, people here in the city are dealing with it and participating in a safe way, is when I see you, hopefully one of my goals as a performer is, hey, do you see me? Mm-hmm. Do you get what I'm saying? And the internet has created context collapse. It has removed hyperbole. It has removed this feeling of intimacy that you would have with friends or family members. And one of the things that is most important, I think, to comedy and to music and to poetry and live performances is as a performer, you stand on stage and say, hey, do you see me? Do you get what I'm saying? Do you feel me? And I can implicitly and explicitly see through your reaction. Yes, I see you. Yes, I get you. Yes, that is horrifying. Yes, that is hilarious. No, I don't agree with you there. And that's invaluable to me. So I'm sorry that sometimes I stare too much. I think that is a problem. In Indian culture, we have a tendency to stare. It's like something, if you go to India, you'll just notice everybody staring at everybody. But it is important for data and feedback, and it helps make the set better. But I'll take that as a note, Allison. I will remember to blink.
Oh no, I enjoyed it. It's kind of it's intense. It's good. It makes everything feel very present and in the moment. And obviously it is, you have rehearsed and you have lighting cues, but it does give it a certain energy of immediacy, knowing that you're looking at somebody and that somebody might look back at you and say something that could throw you off or give you an idea.
Totally. And that has happened before. I think one of the things that I try to include in my comedy storytelling style is this level of confession. And to me, the best comedy is confessional in nature. It's, I'm going to tell you something that I haven't told other people. Hey, can I trust you? This is just between us tonight. Can I tell you a secret? And all of my favorite comedians have had that feeling. And anytime I've watched them on stage, I feel like they're pulling me into a secret. That's what I love most about the art form. And so I try to have that element of kind of secrecy, of confession in my show, of like, okay, we're having this moment right here, right now. Here's something that I've been hiding the past couple of years. Let me tell you this story. So it feels like I'm just talking to a friend.
My guest is Hasan Minhaj. He's playing Radio City Music Hall this weekend. The name of the show is The King's Jester. Since we're talking about engagement with people, you've been touring with this show. What has it been like with the masks?
It's been interesting not being able to see people smile, but I can hear the laughs, but I can tell the general vibe from people's, as strange as this sounds, I can tell people's vibe and demeanor from eye contact. I can see the kind of like smizing that people are doing, and luckily I'm at that point in my career now where I'm doing theaters. And so there's enough people in the audience where I can get a sense of how the collective energy of the room is reacting to the material.
I'm curious, how do you workshop a show like this?
Yeah. Yeah. It's it was a process. So as the world started to open up again, a lot of, and I'm sure you guys were covering this as well, a lot of smaller market performing arts theaters were slowly starting to open up again. And a lot of them ended up reaching out to us, to some performers like myself, Trevor, Jim Gaffigan, Mike Biglia. Mm-hmm. They were asking us, hey, if you're thinking about coming back out again and workshopping this material, please don't just go to the big theaters that are owned by the big conglomerates. They're going to be okay. Like, can you help us come back and get back up on our feet? And one of the things that I started doing before I launched the full tour is I would do these little secret residencies at these small, tiny little black box theaters, 100 seats or less.
Oh, cool.
You know? Yeah. And so, you know, I was in Winston-Salem, North Carolina for 2 weeks, just quietly, like didn't advertise it, was just there, then went to Memphis, Tennessee, was there for another like 2 weeks, and just doing dozens and dozens and dozens of performances back to back, you know? And the show started when I would go out, the show would be maybe 2 hours, 2.5 hours, really long. And the audience, and I got to thank the local communities for just supporting me, helped me trim this thing down and get it into shape in a way that I wouldn't have been able to had I just had to just immediately go out to the big theaters. And so that was really, really helpful. And it was cool to see these local communities, these local theaters get back up on their feet and then just see the love from the audience too. It was really, really cool.
What was the toughest edit? That thing that had to go and it hurt.
Oh man. Well, that comes from the director, Prashant Venkatramanajam, who's been my longtime collaborator and co-writer, co-creator of Patriot Act. He wrote the Correspondence Center with me, producer on Homecoming King. He can always be, we have this brotherhood type relationship where he can tell me really ugly truths with the sobriety of day. You know how you have those friends that come backstage and they're like, oh, you're doing great. Oh, dude, so funny, dude. And then he'll just shoo everybody out of the room and he'll be like, Hassan, they're lying to you. They are lying to you. it's always that one friend on your wedding day that's like, hey, don't listen to them. This does not look good on you. Please don't do that. Please don't wear that, you know? And I've always had that, that level of transparency with him where he will be my toughest critic in a good way. And so he was the one who's always been like, hey, look, you cannot have an eight act one man show. I love you, buddy, but you're not that interesting. So this has got to go. This has got to go. This has got to go. And this has got to go. And in a weird way, I was okay with it. I'm proud of myself for just putting all of that out on paper, putting it out there and trying. Like, you get to a certain point in your career, sticking with it and trying to be as prolific as possible, that's now the goal, you know?
My guest is Hassan Minhaj. He's performing at Radio City Music Hall, The King's Jester, it's called. So 5 shows in the city.
Yeah.
You've been on tour. What do you do to keep your stamina up? How do you stay healthy enough, sane enough, focused enough to do that many performances?
It's been tough. It's been really, really hard. You know, I have 2 kids at home. My daughter's in school. My son now is back in school. And so I still like to take my daughter and son to school. That's a part of my mm-hmm. routine. And so when I'm out, I'll do the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sundays, and then I'll come right back. Believe it or not,
wow.
Exercising, meditating, water and prayer. Like those are the biggest things. The thing I have to get better about is coming down after I get off stage, because I'll get off stage and I'll just be wired and I'll have all these thoughts. And so the toughest part about being on the road is actually just going to sleep once you're done. Cause sometimes I'll just be like, you know what? I'm just going to watch Euphoria. And then,
and then
I'll get off stage. Everybody's talking about Euphoria. So I'm like, I'm going to watch Euphoria. And then 4 hours later, I'll just be an absolute horror. And I'll be like, is this the world my kids are entering? Oh my God. You know, and so those are the things I have to get better about. Hey, when you get off stage, don't watch Euphoria. Don't watch anything. Just try to like read a book and go to sleep. So I got to be better about that.
Or watch the Yule Log or something, you know?
Totally. Totally. Maybe the Yule Log or just, I don't know, do some headspace. I don't know. I got to be better about it. But once everybody's talking about something, I'll just end up diving in, and it's not good. So that I have to be better about that, Allison.
What does walking your kids to school do for you?
I think the best thing that it's done for me, and I feel this is going to sound so corny, but I mean this sincerely. I just feel so lucky that I get to have Spike Lee tickets to their life. Like, I get front row tickets to just witness my daughter learning to ride a bike, jumping on the playground, riding her scooter. I'm getting to see her be funny and witty and clever. And I just feel so lucky that I get to witness those things. And one of the things I think about all the time, and I try to remind myself, and Bina, thank God I have Bina in my life, my wife. One of the things she reminds me all the time is, hey, these moments are just going to whip right by and nobody's going to miss them but us. And so life moves at the speed of the Instagram feed, and nobody's going to remember and cherish or care to cherish the memories for my daughter and my son as much as me and Bina. And I try to remember, hey, like these moments when I'm walking her to school or picking her up, she may not remember them, but they're leaving a profound impact on me, and they're incredibly grounding. And they, one of the things that they've done, and I'm so lucky to be her dad, is I get to see her wonder and her joy that she gets in everyday life and activity. The way a tree looks, the fact that she sees a snowman in someone's front yard, these little things that I'll just walk right by, she's able to look at them with wonder and amusement. And it's really inspiring for me. I really love it. I'm so lucky that I get to be her dad.
My guest is Hasan Minhaj. The name of the show is The King's Jester. It's at the Radisson Music Hall this weekend. So this is really funny. There's this, talk about the opposite of reality. You have this hype video and a roast on your Instagram when you announced your shows at Radio City. And it features some very New York sounding voices. There's a fashion designer and bon vivant, Wayne Diamond, plus my personal favorite, Big Time Tommy. Let's take a listen.
Yo, did you hear Hasan Minhaj sold out Radio City?
Hasan, what?
Who?
Hussein?
Hussein Minhaji?
Indian Gumby?
Who the f*** are you?
And I never heard of this guy in my lifetime.
The guy looks like Ryan Seacrest went through a curry car wash, that guy.
That's the guy. The PowerPoint, the guy.
You're not a real comedian if you use TV screens.
So what was the thinking behind this group of fellas?
Well, okay, so... I really, I was just listening to it, maybe laugh. Look, I really, you know, baby bird learned to fly here in New York City. I really kind of gained my confidence and my chops at comedy here in the city. And one of the things you learn as you come up in New York City as a comedian is nobody in New York cares about you. You could be walking through the West Village. You could be walking through the clubs. Real New Yorkers do not care who you are, what your credits are. There's only like a handful of people that have that sort of like folk hero status. I am not one of them. And so one of the things that I, you know, kind of wanted to poke fun at is the fact that, you know, I've spent the past 8 years or so in the city trying my best to get good at comedy. But I would always meet these very New Yorkers who have no idea who you are, that don't care who you are. And I just thought it would be really funny to just kind of reach out to them and kind of roast myself. And there's a really great guy on Instagram. His name is New York Nico, and he's found these very legendary New Yorkers. And so I reached out to them. I reached out to Nico, and we kind of got everybody, Lukey Lunchbox, Big Time Tommy, Cousine, and Wayne Diamond, and they all jumped on, and they had no problem roasting me. And it just made for a really fun spot to promote the Radio City shows.
New York Nico, friend of the show. We have him on all the time. He's the best.
Nico's the best. Shout out to New York Nico, the best.
And so is Big Time Tommy. Sidebar, my friend's son, for her birthday, got Big Time Tommy to make her an answering machine message. It's the best.
And you know what's so great? They're such sweet guys.
They're great. They're
such sweet guys. Yeah. So even after like they roasted me, they would like give me a big hug and they're like, I'm so proud of you. And I'm like, oh, thanks, man. It's such a New York thing. Like the way they treated me is the same way Knicks fans treat the Knicks, where they're yelling and screaming and roasting me, but it's coming from a loving place. And that's it, to be a New York comedian and to come up in New York City, it's only right that those New York legends roast me.
And one of them made a message of the PowerPoint. you're the PowerPoint guy?
Yeah.
How do visuals play into the King's Jester, if they do?
Yeah, so visuals are a huge component in this touring part of this touring show. I've always loved the way light, sound design, art design, and stage design all come together. So we've designed a really beautiful set. Shout out to our stage designer and lighting designer, Jaffe Weideman and Aaron Ryan, who did the graphics. They did an incredible job creating and building this touring show. And I really use the full theatrical experience to make the show feel really full and satisfying to everybody in the house. And I love that. I love that about visual storytelling. And so I'm really excited for people to see the show. It really is a fun visual experience. I'm not clicking the button the way Lukey Lunchbox says. I just click a button. I don't click a button. It's all somebody else is clicking the button. But yes, there are cues, and yes, that's a part of it.
Is it true that the projector didn't work on one of the first shows?
It is true that the projector didn't work 20 minutes before our first show in Miami, and it was terrifying. I was like, "How is this happening?" And I felt like it was Kismet at that point. What are you going to do 20 minutes before someone goes down? I was just like, hey, we got it. The show must go on. Thank God they restarted the servers and everything worked out okay. But yeah, it was terrifying opening night to not have the all like the projectors and the lights and all that stuff working was very, very terrifying. But it worked out. It worked out okay.
What have you learned about yourself working on this project?
I think the biggest thing that I have learned about myself, specifically in regards to my comedy philosophy, it's definitely become much more clear. I remember when I first started doing stand-up comedy, I would say anything and do anything to be funny. And as I've got, I mean, you're literally just parsing together material. You're reaching every which way. Hey, is this funny? Hey, do you think this is funny? Hey, maybe I'll just say this wild thing and you'll laugh at it. And as I've gotten older and I've gotten to this part of my career, I think I've really understood, hey, what type of jokes do I like? What type of material do I like performing? What's, as Bina sometimes pulls me to the side when I'm working on new material. Hey, that doesn't sound good coming out of your mouth. Like, don't use that word, or, hey, don't say that joke that way. It just sounds weird. And I think one of the things that's happening right now, especially as comedy has become this very global internet experience, people can watch comedy without even having to go see it live, is there's this fundamental philosophical divide that's been happening for people. Hey, who can you make fun of and who can't you make fun of? Are you allowed to laugh at other people? Are you allowed to laugh at yourself? And I think what I found through this project is the type of comedy that I find most interesting to me is the type where I analyze myself. I point inward and go, hey, this is what's funny, strange, or weird about me. Hey, based on these anecdotes, this is what I've learned in my life about me. And I found that to be deeply satisfying for myself personally, just as a person. And I think the audience can see, hey, even if I disagree with his final take or perspective, he's telling his story. So he's being sincere and authentic in what he's saying. And that's worked for me, you know?
The King's Jester is at Radio City Music Hall this weekend. My guest has been Hasan Minhaj. Hasan, thank you so much for spending so much time with us and break a leg this weekend.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.